I'm Jim Cameron, Jim Cameron Consulting, broadcasting from the Fountainhead, home of Synergy Billing, and I'm your host for Volusia Matters, news, interviews, and matters that impact Volusia County directly or indirectly. And if you would, please click the like or follow button if you want to receive notice of this podcast, because it'd sure help me. And now for the news. At its meeting last week, County Council accepted Volusia Forever property acquisition priority recommendations that were brought forward by the Volusia Forever Advisory Committee. And for a list of those properties, go to Volusia County website, volusia.org. They also appointed to the Affordable Housing Advisory Committee Dwight Selby, Sue Odina, Mark Billings, and Waylon Neese, and two others. And then for the Construction, Licensing, and Contractors Appeal Advisory Board, they appointed Caitlin Sutherland, James Jones, and Mike McDonald. Council also approved a report of transfer of SunRail's financial obligations from Florida Department of Transportation to Central Florida Commuter Rail members, including Osceola, Orange, Seminole, and Volusia counties, as well as City of Orlando. And with capital and operating cost and other expenses, it's going to be about $60 million annually. And the council agreed to a phased-in approach whereby FDOT covers SunRail cost until December the 31st. After that, Volusia's portion kicks in, that being the next fiscal year, which is going to run the county somewhere between $6 to $7 million or $8 to $9 million if there's going to be expanded weekend-type service. And it was also mentioned that DeLand's SunRail station should be open sometime this summer. Also with the county, they will reopen the online application portal for the Transform 386 Hurricane Ian Homeowner Recovery Program on Monday, April the 1st. Now, Transform 386 initiative, funded by U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Program, supports eligible homeowners impacted by Hurricane Ian by offering repairs and reimbursement for completed work. And with over 1,000 applications already submitted, affected homeowners are encouraged to apply as soon as possible so staff may begin reviewing their eligibility. For more information, including eligibility criteria and benefits, go to www.transform386.org. Moving on February 28th, an employment expo took place in Deltona, whereby 26 employers, including Deltona City Government, Halifax Health, Advent Health, and County Government, was there to fill various positions. And that job fair drew hundreds of local residents looking to go to work or looking to change jobs. Next item. In the last several years, City of DeLand has added nearly 10,000 new residents, and city officials are surveying residents about growth, infrastructure, and the city's vision for the future. And one of DeLand's strong points has been a vibrant downtown. But however, like City of New Smyrna Beach, parking has become a challenge. Now, in addition to apartments and new single home subdivisions on the horizon, a new SunRail station will open this summer. However, with that station 4 miles to the west of downtown, there's talk maybe of a shuttle service. Now, this citizen survey will be presented to DeLand's Planning Board and City Commission in April. And whatever they find out will help the city update its comprehensive plan, which is set to be finalized later this year. Next item, moving on to Daytona Beach, members of the Daytona Beach Charter Review Commission have started the process of reviewing the city's 36-page charter, and they're making recommendations for changes or additions, which will be presented in a final report to the City Commission June 5th. The CRC is hosting 3 town hall meetings whereby the public can share their recommendations for changes to the charter. Now, one meeting was already held March 25th at the Charles Cherry Community Center. Next one will take place Monday, April the 8th at the Daytona Beach Police Department's Community Room. And the next one after that will be Monday, April the 22nd at the Schnebley Recreation Center. Both meetings will be at 6 p.m. For more information about the charter review process, it can be found at www.codb.us/charter-review. Then, also in Daytona Beach, beginning this month, high-tech security cameras are being installed in the entertainment area along Seabreeze Boulevard, North Oleander Avenue, North Wild Olive Avenue, and Seabreeze Boat Ramp in an effort to deter crime and assist law enforcement. Total cost to the city is $170,000, and once operational, live views from these cameras will be fed into the police department's Grandview substation. Now, Mayor Derek Henry contributed $20,000, and Zone 2 Commissioner Ken Strickland provided $80,000 from their respective COVID local fiscal recovery funds allocations. The Edgewater City Council hosted a goal planning session at City Hall. Some of the ideas they discussed included stormwater management, Citizens Academy, internships for high school students at City Hall, an update of the 2008 vision plan, as well as a 5-year plan for a new City Hall and community center. The idea of economic development plan was brought up to bring more new businesses to expand the commercial tax base in the city. Next, still in the legislature, Governor DeSantis signed the following bills. Senate Bill 7016 and 7018. Now, these are part of the Live Healthy package, which includes $717 million for health care initiatives to attract more doctors to the state, in addition to new training opportunities, improving access to health care services in rural areas, and promoting technological advancements. Another one, House Bill 1365, which prohibits unauthorized public camping and sleeping, which also promises greater access to substance abuse and mental health services for homeless individuals. It empowers residents and business owners to sue local governments for failing to uphold this ban. Another bill, House Bill 7073, eliminates certain taxes, fees homeowners pay on their property and flood insurance, thus reducing property insurance premiums by more than $500 million statewide. Another bill, Senate Bill 7028, grants $200 million in funding for My Florida Safe Home
which provides matching grants of up to $10,000 for homeowners who fortify their homes with new hurricane-safe doors, windows, or replacing their roof. And these improvements, in turn, help reduce insurance premiums. House Bill 1029 is a new pilot program, Property Insurance Initiative, to expand My Safe Florida Home to now allow condo associations to pursue matching grants for storm hardening renovations.
Also, the legislature approved Senate Bill 280 regarding vacation rental units, which would give the state more authority in regulating these units as opposed to local governments, cities and counties. Once the governor receives the bill, he has 15 days to either sign it, veto it, or allow it to become law without his signature. However, opponents to the bill include neighborhood residents, local government officials from coastal and tourist communities, and realtors say the bill will tarnish their quality of life and erode property rights for homeowners, and they're urging Governor DeSantis to veto the measure. So stay tuned.
Next item, moving on to Washington. This past Friday, the U.S. House and Senate approved a $1.2 trillion federal spending bill prior to a 12 midnight deadline to avoid a government shutdown. The House voted 286 to 134. Congressman Michael Waltz and Corey Mills both voted no, citing opposition to reckless and fiscally irresponsible spending measures. The Senate voted 74 to 24. Senator Marco Rubio voted no. Senator Rick Scott did not vote. Now, this 1,000-page bill funds the state, labor, health, human services, homeland security departments, the Pentagon, and the legislative branch until September the 30th. And some of the things that includes: $200 billion cut in federal spending over the next 10 years, a $6 billion clawback of unused COVID-19 relief funds, a $27 billion increase in defense spending, plus a 5.2% pay increase for U.S. service members, plus $3.3 billion in continued funding for Israel. And then still in Washington, be looking for several special elections to fill vacant seats in the U.S. House. Now, New York's 26th district has a special election April the 30th. Three political agencies have rated this safe Democratic or solid Democratic. California's 20th district has election May 21st. Those same agencies rated it solid Republican or safe Republican. Ohio's 6th congressional district election on June 11th. Again, those three agencies rated it solid or safe Republican. And there are two special elections that will occur, you know, still on November the 5th. One to fill the remaining 2 years of a 6-year U.S. Senate term that was vacated by Nebraska Republican Senator Ben Sasse, who resigned to become president of the University of Florida. And then also one to fill the rest of California Democrat Dianne Feinstein's 6-year term after she passed away last September. But then since then, Democrat LaFonza Butler is filling out that role. And quickly, last week it was Colorado Republican Congressman Ken Buck leaving office. Now, Congressman Mike Gallagher, a Republican from Wisconsin, has announced that he's going to resign from Congress April 19th. Now, his early departure affects Republican majority in the House, leaving them with a, I believe, 216 count to 213 Democrats. Also in November, New Jersey Democrat Senator Bob Menendez is up for re-election. However, he is facing federal bribery charges and won't be running in the Democrat primary. He plans to run as an independent if he's exonerated. And still in Washington, while the Federal Reserve has sought to bring inflation to 2%, the Fed is expected to keep federal funds interest rates at approximately 5.5% this week, and the same rate it has kept since last July, and has meant a surge in borrowing cost. And they want to make borrowing more expensive, thereby reducing spending and curbing inflation. However, Consumer Price Index has been 3.1% back in January and 3.2% in February, still raising concerns about the need to keep those rates elevated. Now, economists think the earliest that the Fed could begin cutting rates is during its June 11th and 12th meeting. If the inflation rate remains above that Fed 2% target, there may be two additional rate cuts before the end of 2024. And it seems like inflation is being driven by housing cost, nationwide housing shortage, and higher mortgage interest rates. And while the Fed tries to sustain pressure on price growth by keeping higher interest rates, they must do so without causing unemployment to rise. And the current U.S. unemployment rate is 3.9%. Next item, I'm sure y'all have heard news about a recent settlement involving real estate and National Association of Realtors. Now, last week, local realtors, Jamie Gahayos and her husband, Rick Durgan, with Lifestyle Realty, hosted a webinar on a recent settlement regarding the National Association of Realtors. Now, they're both with us to provide a summary of what the impact of this might have on the real estate market.
So yeah, so just basically as a quick summary, I'll try to be as fast as I possibly can on this. Everybody pretty much knows that there's been a large class action lawsuit in the real estate industry going on for quite some time now. Actually started back in 19, and it included NAR, the National Association of Realtors, and included some large brokerages who have since actually settled themselves. And actually, basically what's happened is the class action suit was geared at the alleged price fixing of setting a certain rate for the commissions in real estate, and also how it got paid. There was basically the belief was that the sellers were being misguided and paying a buyer broker that represents buyers commission that they weren't aware of. So what happened was NAR decided, even though they thought they had a really good case to actually win this in an open court, they decided the best thing they could do was to settle. And the reason for that is it protected their whole entire class for the most part. Anybody associated with the National Association of Realtors, any brokerage under $2 billion a year in volume is now protected. Anybody, all the MLSs under their guidance, everybody is actually protected and included in this proposed settlement. The proposed settlement still has to go through the approval of the court, But you'll usually that's just crossing the T's and dotting the I's, unless somebody really has a complaint. There may be some minor changes, but for the most part, it looks like this is going to go through. So the only people left out of this are going to be larger brokerages over $2 billion in volume. Now, let me just explain what this actually means to the public, because there's been a lot of misconception out there in the media. So what it really means is really two or three things. For the everyday buyer or consumer or seller and every everyday agent, it really comes down to a few little things. Moving forward, as of mid-July, it's proposed right now, every agent in every brokerage for every sale and transaction that happens will have to have a buyer broker agreement submitted to the MLS if they're representing a buyer. All right. In the past, it was not required. It was recommended, and a lot of people in the industry were doing it, but now it's going to be a requirement. And it's going to disclose exactly how they do the commission structure and what they're required as a buyer's agent or buyer broker to get compensated. On the other hand, you still have the listing agreement. That's not going anywhere. Might get changed with some disclosures and things, but that listing agreement for the seller is going to pretty much stay the same with disclosures as well on how that gets paid. So in the past, how it's worked is you go out there as a listing agent and you go present your product. You present the fact that you're the best agent for that customer. Then you enter into a listing agreement. And in that listing agreement comes a commission. You can't really say the standard commission. It's a negotiable. It's always been negotiable. It has never not been negotiable. There is obviously a standard that people have used in the past, but that's always been negotiable. I know agents that do less and agents that do even more than that. So now what's going to happen is going to be very, very clear and disclosed. But the buyer's brokers generally used to get paid, and they still will, potentially, from the listing broker's commissions. So the listing broker settled and did an agreement with you for 6% or 5% or 4% or whatever it was. They would offer half of, or usually half, sometimes not even half, of a percentage of their commissions to the buyer agent for bringing a buyer to the home and selling it. Moving forward, that buyer agreement has to be filed with the MLS. And no longer, number two fact, no longer can they actually put on the MLS the amount of commissions being offered to a buyer broker. That now cannot be there. That will have to be individually disclosed through their phone calls, emails, texts, however they want to do it, their websites, however they want to do it. It cannot be in an MLS as far as disclosure. In the past, you would see the agents would see 6% or 5%, and the buyer broker would be offered whatever percentage they were offering. That's no longer allowed. Now it has to be separate. And the buyer broker has to be clear with the buyer what they're charging, what they're getting paid. It's not free. It's not a free service. It never was a free service. It just was how it was paid. So in the future, they're going to have to either sit down and settle that with what the buyer's going to pay them, or with concessions with the seller, or even, again, the same thing that's happening now, just negotiating with the listing broker to get compensated. It's just how it's being done is the only real difference here. It's always been negotiable. It's never going to change. It's still going to be negotiable. Those are the two big things. Buyer broker agreement, no listing of commissions on the MLS. And the third real big fact that's going to affect everybody is it goes into effect sometime in mid-July if everything's approved by the courts. Those are the only three main facts that are going to affect 90% of America. The other facts are just for larger brokerages that are not part of this. And that's really it in a nutshell, Jim.
Now, if people want to see a replay of Jamie and Rick's webinar, go to jamie.gallegos, GALLEGOS, at lifestylerealty.group. That's lifestylerealty.group. Next, we've got with us today David Robinson, the Daytona Regional Chambers Director of Advocacy. Now, you may be seeing him at different city and county meetings, and I know he just completed Volusia Days at the Capitol up there in Tallahassee, though, so we wanted to interview him. Glad to have you with us, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
Okay. Well, listen, I know you've been busy down there, David, and especially with the legislative session going up there in Tallahassee. And I believe it was February 26th and 27th that y'all were up there for Volusia Days at the Capitol. How'd things go up there for Volusia Days?
Oh, absolutely. It went very well. We had amazing speakers. Definitely we had some agency heads, some of our agency heads that we had. We had Secretary Jared Perdue with transportation. We had Commissioner Jaworski, who's with the Office of Insurance Regulation. We also had a couple of members of our delegation, like Representative McLean and Representative Leak, along with Secretary Alex Kelly. So I've just been hearing such great feedback from those who attended. This was my first one, as I've only been in this role since November. So I'm just really excited and happy that everyone found their worth during these days with traveling up there. So yeah, it was great, a great 2 days for sure.
Well, I heard also that it went very, very well, and so I wanted to congratulate you on that, though. So that said, rest of the session, how did legislative recommendations from chamber, how did those fare up there for the bills that you were looking out for?
Yeah, so we were following a few, and just like any session, many of them were dead, but some of them passed as well. But kind of give you a breakdown of our 2024 legislative priorities, which we poll our members. And so this is how we determine our priorities each year. And we came up with six this year. And those six are property insurance affordability and accessibility, affordable housing, workforce availability and training, economic development funding, infrastructure and road improvements, education funding, and healthcare insurance affordability. And so out of those six, there were a few that we were following that I did see pass in the legislation and also sponsored by some members of our delegation. One of those, HB 433, which was regarding employment regulations. And so here was co-sponsored by Representative Barnaby and Representative Tremont. And this pretty much blocked places from providing extra regulations on particular heat exposure requirements that weren't necessarily required under state or federal law. This was big because it can get, things like that can get political if it's not under a law. So that was really great to see, and it was great to see our delegation involved with that. Another one I wanted to point out is HB 7073, which is based on taxation, and that was also sponsored by Representative McLean, another member of our delegation, and just saving over $500 million in savings, which is huge for our members. As you know, we have many small business owners, so a lot of these overtaxation and a lot of these regulations really do affect the smaller businesses.
Was that taxes and fees on insurance premiums?
Yes.
Yeah. That is a good bill.
Yes. So we were really excited about that. So what I'm doing now, I'm working on a legislative wrap-up to send out to our members, kind of highlighting some of these things and some of these bills. One, to show them that we are advocating for, on their behalf, of course, but also we want to highlight that we have active members in our delegation as well, which is always good to see. It is always refreshing, especially living within a community.
Especially, because Tom Leak himself being chair of House Appropriations Committee, though, that goes a long way, though. So, sure.
Absolutely.
So, anything else, though, that you're working on up there in Tallahassee or maybe back here in the community that you'd like to mention?
Absolutely. So we are actually having our annual legislative welcome back breakfast. And what we do there is we have our members of the delegation come out to our eggs and issues, which will be on April 11th. And it will be at the Yacht Club. the Halifax Yacht Club, from 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Typically, they're 7:30 to 9, but this one is a little longer because they'll be covering the session. So what they'll do is they'll come in, kind of give an overview of what they individually worked on. And then our chairperson, who this year is Michael Sibley, he'll kind of moderate through that. And so it's always a great turnout. And so I'm really excited about that. All six of them have confirmed. So you'll be able to come out and hear them. It is open to both members and non-members. So you can also reach out to me, give you my information if you have any questions regarding that. My email is david@daytonachamber.com. So if you do have any questions, feel free to reach out.
That's good. Okay. So anything else that you can share with us so that you like to mention that you're working on?
Also, being more involved in the local community. And so one of our priorities at the Chamber is not just focusing solely on the state level things, but also things that are happening in the neighborhood. So I've been making it a point to attending more meetings, whether it's city commission, county council, and even nearby cities, and letting them know that, hey, like, there is someone here advocating on their behalf. And because we are in the community, we want to see the progress and the success of those living in it.
Okay. Well, David, I tell you, it sounds like you got your hands full there and you hit the ground running. So sure glad to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thanks again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Look forward to seeing you at some future meetings. And to finish up, let's not forget the national debt is more than $34 trillion and growing by the minute. It's costing taxpayers $2.8 billion each day to service that debt. Now, over the year, that adds up to about the same amount as the entire U.S. Defense Department budget. Now, look for a new podcast episode to be released next week. And the views expressed on this podcast may or may not necessarily express the opinions of Jim Cameron Consulting. And for more news, check out my newsletter, which is being emailed April the 1st. And if you're not receiving it, call me at 566-2140, and my $1,000 guarantee still stands. And I'd like to put in a good word for my friends, Victoria Fallberg of First Step Shelter and Waylon Niece of Neighborhood Center. They both have difficult jobs, but I appreciate everything they're doing in working with our homeless individuals. Now, this is Jim Cameron signing off, saying God bless Israel, Ukraine, United States, and NATO. And roll tide.